Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel anywhere. Now, first on the docket, Chad DeBell's counsel provides more authority for separate trials. Second, Ghislaine Maxwell's 416-page deposition summarized for you. Third, the family of Jennifer Dulos wants her declared deceased. Fourth, a story of another teacher going that extra mile for the student. Fifth, the University of Utah pays big for ignoring complaints. Sixth, corruption or prosecutorial discretion. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap of all the contestants in the running for the dumb criminal contestant of the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, as well as that little bell over there in the corner so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Now, first on the docket, Chad DeBell's counsel filed a motion basically giving the court some additional authority that he must have found during his research that supports the notion or the proposition as to why he should have a separate trial from Lori Vallow. As you may recall, Chad and Lori Vallow are both charged with the same and similar charges relating to the delay and hindrance of the deaths of Lori Vallow's children, JJ, as well as Ty Lee. Now, Lori Vallow, and through her attorney, has said, hey, we want a joint trial with Chad DeBell. Chad DeBell, through his attorney, has said, oh, hell no, we're not doing that. And he has filed an objection to any severance whatsoever. Motions are coming up, and although the court's not granting access to any motions that have been filed, the court has granted or posted the notice of submission of authority. Now, oftentimes when you file a brief, sometimes there's a new case that comes out and you file supplemental authority. In this particular case, Mr. Pryor, on behalf of Chad DeBell, cites the case of State v. Nava. And what the case of State v. Nava discusses is what is the correct legal standard for a motion for severance and or joinder. Joinder, bringing the cases together. Severance, separating them so that you can have separate trials. Now, in this particular case, this was regarding separate allegations and whether it should be allowed in under 404B evidence, so we've talked about many times here, which is evidence of other crimes and misconduct. And so this opinion of People v. Nava was issued by the Court of Appeals, which the district court has to follow, gives them guidance. Now, it's not exactly the same facts, and it's not exactly the same scenario in Nava, but the law is what it is cited for. And the general proposition is that it's an abuse of discretion standard, which means that it won't be looked at by the appellate courts unless they think that the judge just abused his discretion whatsoever, if there wasn't some basis in fact and law to either grant or deny a severance. And that's what happened in the Nava case, because the court said you shouldn't have allowed in testimony that wouldn't be admissible against the defendant unless you brought in this separate charges. That's exactly what's going to take place here. There's going to be evidence in, let's say, for example, Chad DeBell and Lori Vallow have a joint trial. There will be some evidence that will be admissible only as it relates to Lori Vallow, and some evidence admissible only as it relates to Chad DeBell. Chad DeBell is clearly thinking, at least his attorney is thinking, and I think Mr. Pryor gets it. This guy seemed very comfortable in the courtroom, and I'm telling you, as an attorney for 25 years, done criminal defense work, of the two attorneys in this particular case for Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell, Mr. Pryor is the adult in the room. He clearly has trial experience and he knows what he's doing. He's setting up air just in case he loses on this motion for severance. Bottom line is there's going to be a lot of information that's going to come in as it relates to Lori Vallow and her conversations with other friends and individuals. Now, Chad DeBell wants that information to stay out because it wouldn't come in at his trial because he just doesn't think that it's relevant. And remember, what is relevant evidence? Evidence that goes to prove or disprove a material element in the case, right? The element, did they do something that resulted in the delay or hindrance or the discovery of JJ and Ty Lee? If it doesn't go to prove those elements in the charge, it's not relevant. We're not going to have a circus. We're not going to have a sideshow. There may be lots of other things that the prosecution may want to introduce that will have no relevance as it relates to Chad DeBell. If that testimony were to come in, it could be prejudicial. Probably would not be able to be cured by a limiting instruction that the court would give to the jury and say, you're going to hear some evidence in just a second, but you can only use it as it relates to one defendant, not both. And in that particular situation, the court should probably err on the side of separate trials. Now, wouldn't it be easier if they just did one trial? Absolutely. And in this particular case, there's a lot of evidence that is absolutely identical. The only one that helps, though, is probably the prosecution because they get a dry run at this particular case. Clearly, as I've stated before, Lori Vallow's attorney is in over his head, as you may have seen from our previous show the other day. Mark Means, Lori Vallow's attorney, is putting up gifts, basically saying that all of the witnesses in the case are little rats running away. I think I said mice, but thankfully somebody corrected me. Those are little rats. And that the people with the knowledge, although it's unclear, I mean, is this expert witness testimony? Is this somebody that knows something out there? That they need to come forward and they need to help. They need the resources because they lack resources, which clearly shows, at least in my mind, based on my experience, this guy is desperate. If he's putting out tweets to help the investigation because he doesn't have the resources either for himself or to be able to go out and hire an investigator to go investigate and talk to all these potential witnesses. It takes time and it takes money. Why? People don't work for free, ladies and gentlemen. They don't. Somehow, everyone thinks lawyers should work for free or pro bono. When was the last time you were able to go to the grocery store and say, I'm going to take these groceries and I'll pay for them next week? Or I'm going to go get my car fixed and I'll pay you later. It doesn't work that way. But as I said the other day, Mark Means should probably file a motion to withdraw if he doesn't have the resources to effectively represent his client. He has a duty to his client. And if he can't investigate it, he should go ask for the court to give him court-appointed money. Or second, he needs to withdraw so the public defender could be appointed to Lori Vallow's case. And we're not saying that because we want this case delayed. We're not saying that because we're rooting for Lori Vallow. Not at all. What we want is a fair trial that's not going to come back on appeal because of ineffective assistance of counsel. We'll have to wait and see as it relates to what happens for the motion for severance and or joinder. Obviously, the prosecution wants to join him. Lori Vallow says, yeah, we're on board because he wants to coattail off of Chad DeBell's attorney, Mr. Pryor, who clearly knows what he's doing, whereas Mr. Means has been struggling all the way. Maybe I'll be surprised, but at this point, not so much impressed, that's for sure. Next on the docket, Ghislaine Maxwell. Yesterday, the appellate courts allowed the disclosure of Ghislaine Maxwell's 2016 deposition in a civil case related to allegations which now have brought her to court for her federal criminal case. Well, let me give you a summary of what is in that 416-page deposition. First, didn't recruit anybody, didn't know anyone was underage, never saw or did anything with minors whatsoever. There you go. 416 pages, summarized in three quick bullet points. You're welcome. And just for a reminder for those keeping score at home, today is day 113 that Ghislaine Maxwell has not been suicided. The count continues. Next on the docket, Jennifer Dulos's family is asking the court to have her declared legally deceased so that they can have closure as well as wrap up the estate. As many of you know, Jennifer Dulos, the mother of five, vanished in May of 2019, amid a custody dispute with her estranged husband, Foto Doulos. After months of suspicion, Foto Doulos was arrested for his wife's murder in January of 2020. A few weeks after his arrest, Foto Doulos died in apparent suicide. The judge, who was asked to review this case, said that she needs more time to review the case and may need to call witnesses to determine if Jennifer Doulos should be declared legally dead ahead of the usual 7-year waiting period. Now, the administrator of the Foto Doulos estate, Christopher Hug, also wants her declared deceased because if it's decided Jennifer Doulos predeceased her husband, bank officials will be able to access certain funds from his estate, according to the executor, Mr. Hug. The Doulos' 5 children remain under the guardianship of Jennifer Doulos' mother, Gloria Farber. Now, this has several implications throughout. Now, if you go back to our video, the 12 Undeniable Truths from a Criminal Defense Attorney, one of them is it's always about the money. Now, certainly, I'm sure the Doulos family wants closure, but everyone wants to be able to get to the resources that Foto Doulos had and bank accounts and be able to resolve it. And as we noted, there is a question of who dies first. All right. These are the type of issues that resolved all the time. You know, if a husband and a wife died in a plane crash, who passed away first? Because it depends on where the money goes, who inherits, all of those type of issues. This also raises an interesting question. If the court does not find Jennifer Doulos to be deceased, if that could come in as it relates to Michelle Traconis, the girlfriend, as well as Mr. Mawhinney, the attorney also charged in relation to the death of Jennifer Doulos. If she's not declared deceased, they can continue to argue that she's in fact not dead, just like Foto Doulos' defense team intended to do, which basically said that she ran away in a gone girl theory. We'll continue to follow this just because of the implications that it has regarding the criminal case as well. Next on the docket, another case of a teacher going the extra mile to help out their student. Yes, we love hearing about those stories where the teachers of the year go the extra mile to use their own money to buy pencils and papers and tissues for their kids and help them out the best ways that they can. Please meet Kristen O'Brien, and we will give her the presumption of innocence, but she is a teacher at a private Christian school, and in her spare time, she is a foster parent. Well, she thought that she should go the extra mile and help out her student. Apparently, the student ran away, which caused the mother of the student to look at the child's social media sites. Once on the sites, the mother was able to determine that there has been, in fact, a relationship with the student, her son, and yes, 31-year-old Kristen O'Brien. She taught the boy at the United Brethren Christ Academy in Holy Hill, Florida. Apparently, the mother then took it upon herself to meet with Miss O'Brien at a restaurant, and Miss O'Brien admitted that she had developed a crush on the woman's son and told her all about it. O'Brien apparently felt a little guilty and told the mother that she was actually visiting the family home on September 6th and that the teacher and the young man engaged in sexual conduct while the two were on the couch, and apparently the mother was asleep. Needless to say, Miss O'Brien was arrested and charged with lewd and lascivious battery of a victim between the age of 12 and 16. So, Miss O'Brien, that's not what we refer to when it comes to going the extra mile for your students. And additionally, it's just a little creepy that a 31-year-old woman would be interested in a minor under the age of 16. Always makes you wonder, ladies and gentlemen, the people that are charged with assaulting children, you have to wonder, why are they always there? Usually the first reason is because that's where the children are. Mm-hmm, exactly. You can say you heard it here first. Always be cautious. Well, Let's take a look at this. Now, we talked about the case of Lauren McCloskey last week, and her parents, Jill and Matt McCloskey, and the University of Utah announced a $10.5 million settlement in a lawsuit against the school. In addition, the school will donate $3 million to the Lauren McCloskey Foundation. And in a statement, the university acknowledged and deeply regrets that it did not handle Lauren's case as it should have, and that at the time, if employees failed to fully understand and respond appropriately to Lauren's situation. As a result, the university has failed Lauren and her family, and if these employees had more complete training and protocols to guide their responses, the university believes they would have been better equipped to protect Lauren. For those who are not familiar with the case, Lauren McCloskey was found deceased in her parked car near a residential hall on campus in October of 2018. Melvin Rowland, McCloskey's former boyfriend, allegedly shot and killed her before killing himself the same night. McCloskey, 21 at the time, had reported to the university police that Rowland, 37, was harassing and stalking her. McCloskey ended their brief relationship after learning he was a registered sex offender who lied about his identity and criminal history, including a 2004 conviction of enticing a minor. Lauren and her friends reported incidents of abusive behavior to university officials in addition to their fears of violence, according to the complaint filed in the civil case that ultimately resulted in this $13 million settlement. Parents alleged that the university didn't take Lauren's complaints seriously. In fact, according to the parents, they seemed to show no curiosity about this person who had lied about his age, his name. He was a sex offender. They also found out that he was a convicted felon. They should have investigated. They didn't. And ultimately, Lauren McCloskey is now dead. It just shows, ladies and gentlemen, that you have to know who you are dealing with. And what's the one way you're going to be able to find out that particular information? Do a background search. If the police had done a background search, they would have known that they were not dealing with somebody that was on the up and up. Go to crimetalksearch.com so that something like this doesn't happen to you or anyone that you know. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you'll be able to sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be able to anonymously run a background search. While you do this background search, literally millions of public records are accessed. They are compiled and put into a nice report for you. And you will be able to know what email addresses, what phone numbers, and social media are associated with the individual that you are searching. Additionally, you're going to get, most importantly, one's criminal history. Find out if they, in fact, have been convicted of a felony. Find out if they're lying about their age. Maybe they just don't exist. You'll get records relating to property, divorce records, civil judgments, and bankruptcies. This is the type of information that could have saved Ms. McCloskey, but nobody bothered to do it. If those police had taken the time to run a simple background check, they could have saved her life. And guess what? The McCloskeys knew it, and so did the university. That's why they just paid $13 million for not properly investigating somebody. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, corruption or just simple prosecutorial discretion? Take a look at Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. He is continuing to rid his office of high-ranking aides who earlier this month accused him of committing multiple crimes, including bribery and abuse of office, firing a second whistleblower on Tuesday, and according to a former senior agency official who served as Deputy Attorney General for Policy and Strategy Initiatives, he was also terminated on Tuesday as well. Now, several of these high-ranking officials that worked for the Attorney General made an allegation in a letter dated October 1st that they said they had a good faith belief that Paxton was violating federal and or state law, including prohibitions relating to improper influence, abuse of office, bribery, and other potential criminal offenses. The group filed an official complaint with law enforcement about Paxton's conduct on September 30th. Specifically, the employees accused Paxton of improper influence in a case of Nate Paul. He was an Austin real estate investor who donated to Paxton's 2018 re-election campaign. Paul had been under FBI investigation for more than a year. In the months following a series of August 19th federal raids on Paul's property in Austin, the investor filed for more than a dozen bankruptcies, according to newspaper reports. Now, Paxton's top aide resigned on October 2nd, just hours before the allegations against Paxton became public. By purging his office of staffers who recently filed official complaints pertaining to abuses of office, Paxton is very likely opening the door to a series of unlawful termination lawsuits under the Texas Whistleblower Act as well. Now, these allegations against the Attorney General are very serious. I don't think I can recall a situation where the staff attorneys as well as top aides have accused their boss of crimes openly and publicly. And obviously will give the Attorney General the presumption of innocence. But this certainly requires further investigation by the appropriate authorities in this particular case. Prosecutors have great prosecutorial discretion. That's why prosecutors have such great power. And it's important only to have the right people in there because they make decisions that affect people's lives, their employment status, and ultimately their liberty. And if you have somebody that is on the take, they shouldn't be in office at all. It's called public service. You're there to protect the public. You're there to protect the Constitution, not to get rich and not to line your pockets for your own self-dealings. If the allegations are true, hopefully Attorney General Paxton will resign. If these allegations are not true, hopefully the truth will come out in the future. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Nathan Garisto. That's right. Look at that picture. He is ready to party. Well, that's right. Can you imagine? Alcohol may have been the root of Mr. Garisto's problem. Apparently, the police responded to his residence and the victim, his girlfriend, was covered in pumpkin seeds and pulp. That's right. Apparently, Mr. Garisto, as noted by the police in their reports, was heavily intoxicated while engaged in a verbal argument with his girlfriend. After refusing his girlfriend's request to leave the home, Mr. Garisto did the next logical thing. That's right. He threw a pumpkin and all of the insides of the pumpkin at the victim. When questioned by the police, Mr. Garisto claimed that he only threw the pumpkin at the sliding door and not the victim. Well, guess what, Mr. Garisto? That can be a crime too, if it was done with the intent to annoy, harass, alarm, or intimidate. I would say throwing a pumpkin at somebody while you're drunk could certainly meet those requirements. Now, Mr. Garisto has pled not guilty. He was charged with a misdemeanor, and he was ordered to abstain from alcohol and wear a monitor as part of his bond conditions. So, Mr. Garisto, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Is it for talking to the police? No. Was it for having a few adult beverages? No. It's for being a complete ass while you were being engaged with adult beverages and arguing with your girlfriend. She asked you to leave, you refused. One of the rules we've always talked about here on Crime Talk is that you, A, never, ever, ever hit a girl. And I guess we'll have to include, that includes throwing pumpkins. All right? So Mr. Garisto, for you throwing things at women, that's right, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. And if you are in fact the winner of the dumb criminal contestant of the week, you will be in the running for a Crime Talk mug. We will send it to you. Hopefully, you won't throw it if you are in fact the winner. Now, obviously, our contestant for today is Mr. Nathan Garisto. Let's do a quick recap of our contestants for the week. First, we had the burglary duo of Robert Hobby and Marcus Reeves. That's right, they went on a burglary spree and left some clothing items there. Oh, and that's right, one of them left their wallet. Then we had Melinda Lynn Guerro, who, when talking to the police, would only say as her name was, quote, my butt just farted, end quote. Then we had Bradley Young, who liked to steal things while he was scanning items. That's right, the package of Kool-Aid in his hand that sells for roughly 24 cents, repeatedly palming it and scanning it over the scanners, stealing money. But Walmart security was not fooled, and they got Mr. Young. And then we had yesterday Stephanie Dowdy. That's right, when pulled over for a traffic stop, ultimately concerned about the drugs in her car, instead of just playing coy, no, she didn't do that. She threw it out the car window that just happened to hit the police officer walking up to the car. So those are our dumb criminal contestants of the day. Let me know in the comments below. We'll tally them up over the weekend, and we'll see who gets the Crime Talk mug. Now, if anyone wants a Crime Talk mug or other Crime Talk merchandise, they can go to the link below, order all that cool gear. They'll send it out to you quickly, and you don't even have to become a dumb criminal contestant of the day. When you get that gear, take a photo, send it to us. We'll put it up on our Facebook page and Instagram and our community page, and we'll put it up under our Crime Talk mugshot section. That's all we have for you today. Don't forget to watch our recap that comes out tomorrow of all the top stories throughout the week. Have a great weekend.